So welcome to this week's edition of Blues Talk, where myself and Dave are going to have a look back over the couple of games at the weekend, Ireland against Argentina and our Leinster's match against the Ospreys over in Swansea. So Dave, mixed bag after the four autumn internationals, couple of wins, couple of losses, but we lost our two matches against the big powers.
Yeah, that's what's ultimately will be disappointing about the entire series, is that the two games we actually looked to either perform or win. We certainly didn't win either of them. And, you know, it could be argued, okay, we played well against New Zealand, but we still lost by 20 points. So, you know, moral victories are still losses.
Very topsy-turvy load of results, you know.
Yeah, there were.
France been annihilated by Australia. England beating Australia. England being murdered by South Africa. You know, even Scotland had a couple of reasonably good performances.
Well, Scotland beat South Africa.
Yeah.
France and Australia was strange. When France were there or thereabouts, I think they were in the lead with 20 minutes to go, and then Australia just went through them like people go through cheese-eating surrender monkeys. I mean, they just ripped them to shreds. France always have somewhat eccentric selections in the lead-up to tournaments. They just went for huge guys. I mean, they went for Damien Trai, they went for Rougerie, they went for Jojan as the 10, 12, 13. Whereas the smaller, quicker Australian backs just dance around them.
But I mean, it looks like the Australians don't even want to have a scrum. Just get it in, get it out.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, people have talked about the Australian scrum being poor, and it is a poor enough scrummaging unit, although it has improved vastly over the last 12 to 18 months. All they want is quick channel one ball, get the ball to their backs where they can do damage, and then they have their excellent back row with Pocock and Elson following up.
Yeah.
They're not really that interested in trying anything funny with the scrum. All they want is a secure source of possession.
Isn't it interesting, though, that, say, the two countries that have put least amount of emphasis on scrummaging, Ireland and Australia, where at schoolboy level and at junior club level, where we don't compete in the scrum, once the scrum goes back 1 metre, the scrum is over. That these are the two countries, you know, of the traditional, say, top eight world countries, whose scrum is rubbish.
Well, that's it. I mean, we've depowered our scrum, as you say, through regulation, mainly due to insurance and fear of litigation, which obviously I presume is the same in Australia. But we have a situation now where guys are coming into academies, guys like Keane Healy, for example. First time he'll have faced a full scrum was at the age of 18 or 19. That is ridiculous. Mm. I mean, for previous generations, I mean, I was a prop. I wasn't a very good one, but I was a prop. I was scrummaging in full scrums from the age of 12. And all the Irish props that we've churned out over the years, great Irish props like Popowell, Clossy, Des Fitzgerald, Phil Orr, they were brought up in that environment. And now we have this new environment, and it is absolutely killing us.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I played, we used to crawl off the scrum machine.
Yeah,
crawl off it, your shoulders would be black and blue.
But even professional sides, I don't think are putting as much effort into scrummaging as they used to.
Yeah.
I think they put more into video analysis of the opposition scrum than they do into getting a good set of scrums in training these days.
I mean, Jackman alluded to that in his book, didn't he?
He did indeed, yeah.
And I mean, like, we were being decimated in our scrum against the Argentinians. And, you know, I personally think that the referee made some very, very lenient calls for us. And we should have been penalised a lot more in the scrum. And we certainly should have possibly conceded a penalty try in the first half when we had a series of scrums on our line.
Certainly. But that's how it is these days. I mean, you could watch 10 identical scrums and the referee will give 10 different calls. And, you know, he'd probably be right in each and every one of them because that's...
Well, there's so much going on.
There's so much going on in scrum and indeed lineout. You could give a penalty every time there's a scrum and lineout. But the referees have to realise they have an obligation to the flow of the game as well. I mean, the constant resets. We're resetting scrums that are up and stable at this stage. And that's ridiculous. Just because teams may have marginally beat the engage call. If a scrum is up and stable, that's all you want.
Yeah, I mean, BBC are putting a little clock on it now with the amount of minutes that this particular scrum, or even the amount of scrums in the game. I think I saw one match I think it was 2 weeks ago, and they had 10 minutes of scrums out of the 80 minutes.
Well, I'd actually love to see 10 minutes of scrums. But, you know, to a certain extent, I'm a bit wary about when TV channels do that because they don't...
I think there's a hidden agenda there, you know.
Scrums ruin the entertainment of the thing, you know. Yeah. Maybe they should go for an ad break during scrums or something. Just leave it for the rest of us who really enjoy them.
Yeah.
But for the referees are ruining our enjoyment of the scrum, and that's my problem.
Mm. Well, just going back to the game, I mean, if Kontopomi had his kicking boots with him, that would have been an entirely different game.
Oh, entirely. With the points he left behind and the penalty try you mentioned earlier, Argentina would have been up. And with the the doubts in the players' minds from the previous week, it could have been a whole different game. Mm. I mean, Contepomi spoke afterwards about how Argentina are actually in what he called a valley in terms of a rebuilding phase. They were at a peak for 2007. Now they're in a valley. And I don't think that the team they once were. Mm. The front row is aging and, you know, kind of showed it.
Yeah.
But, you know, they still had the opportunity to do us some serious damage.
Well, why don't we have a look at a couple of our tries that we scored? We take a look at the first one, which is going to be...
this is Ferris's try.
Ferris's try.
It was a very good try, actually. Starts off, Cronin takes the ball up and it's...
Incredibly slow ball.
I mean, Peter Stringer, it's time to grow hair there. But he's looking around. Ball comes out. Now, if we stop it here, what you can actually see is everyone is crabbing sideways. So what it needs is somebody to come in and straighten it. And that's exactly what happens. Bo puts his lip through on a lovely little straight line here. That totally takes the Argentinian defence out of it and he's able to finish off to Ferris. Ferris, who also runs a good line. But that goes back to what we were saying last week in both the Leinster and Ireland games about having skillful ball-handling forwards in the back line. It's not like those guys are two props or two locks who are just looking for contact. But those guys are looking for space.
If you see Heaslip's line, he actually runs parallel to the 15-metre line.
It's a beautiful line.
Yeah.
And Ferris the same. They both straighten. And that's what made that try. It was the line that they both ran. I mean, you can see it here. You can see everyone's crabbing. And then Heaslip just comes in on what looks like a diagonal. But he's the guy running the straight line.
I thought Ferris had a fine game.
Ferris had a very good game. It was one of his best games in a while now, so it was. He's a beast of a boy, as Jerry Thornley once said. Yeah. But you know, he's been very unlucky with injury. Fortunately for us, he's back now. Mm. But he's sometimes I worry about players who are talented but made of glass.
Well, he's had his fair few share of injuries. I mean, even on the Lions, he was exceptional down there, and he picked up an injury and had to go home.
Yeah, he was a cert for a test spot, I think.
And we'll have a look now at Darcy's try, his little cameo try just at the end. Earls, of course, was just denied a TMO decision a few minutes before this.
That's right, yeah. Earls was very unfortunate. It was clearly a try. It reminded me, actually, the night before Ulster were done out of a try, Adam Darcy was done out of a try on a TMO call. When it was blatantly a try, sometimes I don't know if these guys are watching EastEnders or something, but if we look at Darcy's try here, this is all his own work. It's a lovely little chip, gathers it himself, shows patience not to go for it on the full, waits for the bounce. And then just takes it over the line. Some of the Argentinians aren't very pleased, and Darcy gives them the match ball as a souvenir. Felipe congratulates him, of course, which is probably the mark of the man, but I'd say he would rather be congratulating him after a loss.
Exactly, yeah. So, anyway, let's move on and have a chat about our match against the Ospreys. We fielded a fairly weakened team again, obviously because of a few injuries and the guys off playing in Lansdowne Road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again. Well, it was a weakened team, but it was kind of our best B selection. If that's not, I don't want to be insulting to the players who played, but I mean, McFadden and O'Malley are fairly experienced centre combination.
They're getting their experience now. Yeah.
Madigan is getting lots of games this season, which, in fairness to Jack Smith, it's great for him. I mean, that's what a guy needs. The result was disappointing. I thought that was a game that we had in. Not in the bag, but it was a game we could have won after seeing the way we played.
I thought we were going to be stuffed, I have to say. When I saw the Ospreys team that they put out compared to our team, I thought we were going to be absolutely mullered. And I thought the guys showed a lot of guts to put it up to them. And, you know, a bit of indiscipline when we had 13 guys off the pitch, or sorry, 13 guys on the pitch. That's when they scored their penalty try. We scored two great tries. I mean, maybe we have a look at the first one that Conway got.
Yeah, Conway's try. Well, this is Conway's try is kind of, it's just another catalogue in how well Issa Nasiwa is playing this season.
Oh, he showed a great vision.
Oh, great vision. But it's Horgan takes the ball up very well here, actually. This is what makes the try. We get quick ball here. But it looks like there's not much on for Nasiwa, but he uses his power here. Again, two great handoffs and then lovely little dink over the top for Conway, who's, you know, scoring some tries for a guy who's not getting an awful lot of game time. He seems to score every time he plays. Mm. He's a very exciting player. Fair play to the Hardy boys who travelled over.
Exactly.
But, Nasiwa seems to be taking his game to another level every time he's presented with a situation where he has to take responsibility because he's the senior guy.
Yeah.
He seems to be relishing that responsibility. I mean, there's the the senior guy helping the young lad over the line, which is certainly really what you want.
He certainly lived up to what he said he was going to do last year when he had a meet the fans night in Old Belvedere. And he said, like, this is time for, when the boys are away playing for the in the autumn internationals, it's time for the likes of him to step up to the mark. And
a lot of guys talk big and don't deliver. Nasiwa has has delivered everything he said he was going to do. He's done.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was very impressed with Horgan again. Again, we spoke last week about, you know, him again, like Nasiwa, being a senior person in the squad, not throwing his toys out of the pram and really getting stuck in, playing for the second 15.
Yeah, well, I thought Horgan again was very good, a good leader on the pitch. He's an excellent player. I mean, the guy's a world class winger. His track record, he's got a Grand Slam. Barely. He has his Heineken Cup, Magners League. He's got on Lions tours. There's nothing he hasn't done. I mean, he is a world-class player. But he's showing that. But that's the thing.
If you see, a lot of players, they've been there, done that, bought a T-shirt, and they can just sit on their laurels and just, you know, collect their last couple of years as a contracted player. But he's actually putting it in.
Oh, he is, yeah, every week, yeah. You know,
I'm sure he's looking at his mates that he's grown up with, like Darcy and O'Driscoll, still playing for Ireland and, you know, playing in front of, you know, 30 or 40,000 people in the Aviva Stadium while he's off on a freezing cold night over in Swansea front of 4,000. And he still put in the effort.
Oh, it'd be very easy for him to sit in his
laurels. I'm very impressed with that, Dave, you know.
Yeah, no, so. I think it's the mark of a great player that when the conditions get worse, they stand taller. And Horgan has stood tall for us over the last couple of weeks. When we've needed him, he's been there for us.
Yeah.
And I just think he's really, his performances through this series, hopefully the Irish coaching staff are looking at him because, you know, he certainly warrants a spot in the Six Nations squad.
Yeah.
Mightn't be a starter, but certainly in the squad. I mean, he's been very, very good.
But he's only had one cap, I think, under Kidney Fiji, was it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's, I don't really want to start going down the road of slagging off coaches and stuff, but
I think it's fair to say the Kidney holds grudges.
I mean, I know that certainly when he was being appointed Ireland coach, that O'Kelly came out strong against him, and he didn't do him any favors. And he's obviously got something against Mike Ross.
Yeah, well, that stretches back to Ross's time in Munster.
Yeah.
He never started Keith Earls for Munster, and he's equally reticent to start him for Ireland. Maybe, I don't know. Well, he's a conservative coach anyway, and Earls is dangerously young.
It seems that he's got, like, in his mind, you know, a top... Instead of O'Sullivan having the untouchable 15, I think maybe Kidney has maybe 20, 25 players, and that's really it. That's his...
Yeah, he's not really interested in what new players are doing, because that's radical, crazy, communist stuff.
Who knows? But let's have a look at Nasiwa's try.
Yeah, a well-deserved try. Again, shows his game awareness, actually, because...
Oh, well, if you see this, I mean, he was the one that puts the little kick through.
Yeah, yeah. And instead of rushing after it like an idiot, he hangs back to see what comes of it and then takes advantage of that.
A bit similar to O'Driscoll's try against the All Blacks, you know, that he was there to follow it up.
Yeah, similar indeed to O'Driscoll's, was it his first try against Wasps 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Where he follows up a little sideways poke from Rob Kearney.
That's right.
Yeah. I don't know why the ref needed to go to the TMO for this one, because it was fairly clear it was a try. But it was just excellent play from Nathiwa. He puts the chip through, then uses his experience and intelligence to realise, or to hang back in case something comes, and then like a predator, takes the try. I do have to say about that referee was diabolical. His name's David Wilkinson. A lot of people were confused because they thought it was Simon McDowell. I mean, he looks like Simon McDowell. He sounds like Simon McDowell. And he's as feckin' atrocious as Simon McDowell. I mean, he's diabolical. I think we should bring in a rule that no blonde should be allowed referee rugby. They are the ginger of the refereeing world.
Well, I think he made a couple of mistakes on a few of our...
A couple?
Well, you know, he made mistakes on who he pointed the finger at for... Our sin binnings. I mean,
well,
I think legitimate calls, but I think he got the wrong man.
Well, in fairness to him, I mean, a 5'10" out half and a 6'6" lock are fairly similar. I mean, Leo looks like so many people. He's got that every man look. Not. I mean, it was ridiculous. I don't know how he made that mistake. It was a case of mistaken identity for Ed O'Donoghue's sin binning as well.
Yeah.
I mean, both should have had yellow cards, but it would have been nice if it got the right guy.
Correct. And, you know, let's look forward to the Scarlets game. We're going to be missing quite a few with injuries now. Fitzgerald's out. O'Driscoll, I heard Schmidt on the radio tonight. He said he hopes to be back for the Claremont match in the Aviva.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fingers crossed, but I mean, these things are obviously taken with a pinch of salt. Who else? Kearney's out to 2 to 3 months. The talk of him maybe missing Six Nations.
But those are three significant absentees.
Even Conway picked up a bit of
apparently it's whiplash.
Yeah.
So hopefully that won't be too serious. Because he's not going to be looking to sue someone who was driving behind him or anything. But
I mean, if you take, say, Sexton, he's played in all four of the matches, so he's not probably going to start. Darcy's had a fairly intense last few weeks, so I can't see him being picked against Scarlets either.
Well, in a way, the one area of our team that has actually not surprised me, but I've been gladdened to see it has matched expectations are the centres in McFadden and Owen O'Malley. So even if he decides to start Darcy in one of those, I think we're safe enough. If we had everyone available, you'd like to see Sexton burn Darcy, but I don't think we will. So yeah,
it's kind of a juggling act what they're going to do, because they're still going to have to bring guys back in, because the Heineken's only a week after that.
Well, that's it. Yeah,
and they're going to have to try and
get guys back into the systems
that they're going to be playing with.
It's going to be a tricky one. It's
kind of a balancing act between resting them and also giving them a little bit of exposure back into the team.
Well, you know, when it comes down to it, the Heineken Cup is the one that's the important one. So I'd say there'll be a lot of the guys who don't start against Scarlets will be on the bench against Scarlets. So I'd say a lot of them will get some game time, just not 80 minutes.
And it looks like it's going to be a very cold
-9 night over there. But I have to say now, I look forward to every Scarlets game.
It's the best away trip.
Yeah, it's the best away trip. And they have the best non-Leinster player in the entire league in Regan King. Guy's a delight to watch. If you ever watch a Scarlets game, it's worth it just to see Regan King play when he's playing well. And he's playing well this season. Absolutely magnificent footballer. How the Irish provinces missed out on this guy and brought up some dud centres from New Zealand and missed out on the best one around. I don't know.
Yeah, he's a super player, all right.
He is.
So, what are any predictions now for the weekend, Dave?
I predict I'll be drunk.
Okay, it's good.
And I predict, you know, we've had a good run against the Scarlets over the last couple of years.
They're doing pretty well in the O'Magnus at the moment.
But they've turned that was a Scarlets team in transition. It seems to have transitioned now. They had some good results against London Irish last year. They were able
did
to
us a big favour.
They did us a big favour, and they're playing well this year. So I hate to say I'd settle for a loss, but a losing bonus point wouldn't be the worst disaster ever.
Yeah, and I think you know, Munster losing as well and not getting a bonus point the weekend also did us a bit of a favour. Like, we kind of net one point up on that. So I think we're about sixth in the league.
In the league. The only real prediction I can say is that it's going to take us months to get Saucepan Fack out of our heads.
Well, I'm looking forward to giving it a few bars. Anyways, and thanks a million for watching, and I hope you enjoyed it. Cheers, bye.